Let's just go for it. Come on.
Yeah, right. Who's I
don't know. Yeah. It's true. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense. I'm Kimberly Adams.
I'm Kai Rosdahl. What do you want to know? Wednesday is the search engine optimization title of the podcast today. I don't know if that's true, but we will take your questions, answer them, and send you all along on your merry way in like 15
Indeed.
Minutes. Indeed. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. A little bit less. We don't have so many questions today. If you've got a question about the economy, business, or technology, you can email us at makemesmart@marketplace.org. You can leave us a voicemail at 508-UB-SMART. Part one of the show today is going to be about the ever-present, everybody's favorite topic, inflation. Part two, the social media zeitgeist of the moment, the queen. So starting off with inflation, Jack in Ohio writes, "With the Fed planning more interest rate increases to fight inflation, I wonder why they haven't started with larger increases sooner. Why not start with a bigger 250 basis point increase to get in front of it faster?" Bigger is a minimum. Massive. Kai.
Jack. Am I doing this one? Holy cow.
Yeah, I think you have to give some context for just how big 250 basis points is first.
So first of all, the lingo. 250 basis points. One basis point is 1/100th of a percentage point. So 250 basis points is 2.5%. Here's the historical context of all, and this comes from Pat Harker. He's the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. So of all the interest rate increases that the Federal Reserve has done, like in the last 50-something years, 83% of them have been 50 basis points or below. That is to say, half a percentage point or less, right? So the three that the Fed now has done of 75 basis points, 0.75 percentage point, are already really big. And that's a big string of big increases for the Fed. Now, I think it's a fair question to ask. If the Federal Reserve is as worried as Jay Powell and all the members of the Federal Open Market Committee say they are, worried about inflation, I think a fair question to ask is, hey, Jay, how come you're not going to whack them with like a full percentage point instead of this, you know, relatively measly, given the times, 0.75 percentage point? And here's what Raphael Bostic and also Chair Powell himself have told me. They want to do more rates for longer because they want to do 75 basis points, 0.75 percentage point increase for longer rather than one big or several big whacks at the economy, because they worry that that would tighten financial conditions so much. Remember, financial conditions are what the Fed is trying to do, right? Make money more expensive in this economy. They worry that going so big would tighten things up so much that a recession would come precipitously, that the economy would cool in a disorderly way. Right now, what they've got going on is a relatively orderly cooling of the economy. And if they go at a full percentage point, or holy cannolis, 250 basis points, 2.5 percentage points, they worry that that would just freeze things, that Wall Street would basically have an aneurysm and everything would stop. And that is most emphatically what they do not want. Okay. So that's why they're doing it. They have promised, Lael Brainard, the vice chair, the chair himself has promised that they're going to do what they have to do for as long as they have to do it to beat inflation, but they have to do it in a way that's not going to cause a precipitous recession. And so that's why they're not going to go 250 basis points, I do believe. Here's the other thing. Sorry, let me say one more thing. And I think I said this the other day. We are now inside the quiet period for the Federal Reserve's next meeting. The Federal Reserve's next meeting is next week. Right. And so before and after that meeting for a period of 10 days, Fed governors don't say anything because they don't want to spook the markets. They don't want to give any hints as to what's going to come, because lots of money can be made if you know what the Federal Reserve is going to do. So this CPI print came inside the Fed's quiet period window. So the Federal Reserve doesn't have any time or chance to get out and lay the groundwork for a 100 basis point, a full percentage point increase. If the Fed was able to talk now, you might hear Powell and Lael Brainard, the vice chair, saying, well, we may have to reconsider how quickly we tighten, or something like that, that would let traders know, okay, 100 basis points, a full percentage point is on the table. They have no way to do that now, and so that's why it's not going to happen this time.
CPI print is Kai speak for the latest inflation report.
Oh, sorry. Yes, that was yesterday. Yes.
And I think
I hate to do that. I hate doing the judging thing. Sorry. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. No, but I mean, I think what you're really talking about is a fear of an overcorrection, right? And
yes, absolutely.
This idea, it's like the frog in the pot of water. It's like if you turn the temperature up slowly, it'll, adjust the temperature until it dies, which is probably not the best parallel. But anyway, you can adjust to a temperature change slowly better than if it went from 50 degrees outside to 100 degrees outside, you're going to feel that a lot more, and it's going to cause problems.
Feel it in a hurry.
So,
you betcha.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. On we go. We're doing another inflation one. Here it is.
So, hello to everybody at Make Me Smart.
Hi.
This is Blaine from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Blaine.
So, my question is, we're always talking about the Fed shooting for a target rate of 2%.
Yeah.
And I want to know why 2%? Why not 1% or 3%? I think we all know why not 8%, but why 2%?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good question. I think it's like one of those Goldilocks and the Three Bears type things. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want it too hot, mm-hmm. you don't want it too cold, you want it just right. And through multiple iterations and trying things out, central banks all over the world have kind of landed on 2% inflation being just about right, where wage growth can keep up with price growth, and it reveals sort of a healthy growing economy. But where we actually got that 2% inflation, so thank you for this question, Blaine, because we got to dive into some history that I absolutely didn't know about. So there are stories in the New York Times and in Quartz that this idea for 2% came from New Zealand. Because back in the late 1980s, New Zealand was recovering from really high inflation, like much of the world. And during a TV interview, the finance minister just sort of made this casual remark about how inflation should ideally be between 0 and 1%. And then the Central Bank of New Zealand started making all these calculations about how to get there and landed on 2% as a target in order to sort of land between 0 and 1%. Then once that target was set in New Zealand, all these other central banks were like, hey, that's not a bad idea. Let's set an inflation target too, because, you know, peer pressure and everybody wants to be at the cool central bankers table and have an inflation target.
And other words you've never heard put together, the cool central bankers table.
Come on, Ivanka Trump tried to be part of it.
That's right. It's true.
That was a bad image. I remember that video. Anyway, so then American economists started getting on board. It spread all over the world. And the Federal Reserve started using that 2% inflation target internally within the system. And then eventually publicly when Ben Bernanke started saying, yeah, we're aiming for 2%. However, and...
mm-hmm.
It was really hard to land there for a long time. I remember when I first started at Marketplace like 7 years ago, we did these endless stories about how the Fed was trying everything it could do to boost inflation, and it just would not budge. And folks never really landed on a good answer. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe it's not the right target.
It's a good question,
maybe it should actually be closer to 3 or 4, but nobody wants the 8.3% we've got right now.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so the next two questions have to do with the Queen and the British monarchy. So here we go.
Hi, my name is Carl from Silver Spring, Maryland. And
hey,
I was wondering if you can make me smart about the benefits of Commonwealth countries that are part of the English monarchy. Because after the death of the Queen, I've been hearing a lot of countries are reconsidering their relationship with the monarch. Mm-hmm. Thank you, and thank you for making me smart.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. So we have to define some terms here, right? The Queen dies as the head of state of 15 countries. Those are called the Commonwealth realms. And if you've watched any of the coverage of the last, I don't even know what it's been, 5, 6 days, you've heard the phrase realms come into the conversation a lot. So those are 15 countries of which the Queen is actually the head of state. She is also the ceremonial head of the Commonwealth of Nations, which include the Commonwealth realms. Also, though, other countries, bazoodles of them, 56 in total, that were former parts of the British Empire, right? And so it's like 2.5 billion people. It's huge amounts of GDP, mm-hmm. like $13 trillion, right? So it's vast amounts of people. It's vast amounts of money. But it's a largely ceremonial gathering. You see the royals doing tours there, right? Sometimes they're successful and sometimes they're not. If you remember some of the tours that Will and Kate took to Caribbean, a year or so ago, went really, really poorly because of the history, the racist history, one has to say, of the monarchy and the way it has exploited some of its territories. So that's the deal. Now, the benefits... You know, this is really funny. So if you do a little Googling and a little research, you'll find some people, as Marissa did, who basically say, yeah, you know, they get to be in the Commonwealth Games, so that's good. And they're friendly nations, so that's fun. But there are some downsides, right? There are some human rights concerns. There's some lack of transparency concerns about its financing. So mostly I'm going to say it's a historical relic, right, that came out of 1947, 1948, and the partition of India, and the end of the British Empire formally, while the Queen in her formative years, right, the end of King George VI's mm-hmm. reign and the beginning of Elizabeth's reign, tried to maintain some, I don't want to say control because she doesn't really have control, but influence and prestige probably of leading a large group of nations, right? And look, to the point of reconsidering things about the monarchy, countries now are talking more than they have in the past since the Queen has died, of leaving the Commonwealth, of making the Queen not their head of state. The Barbados did that in 2021. So it's happening, right? It's happening. Australia had a referendum a while ago, didn't pass, but there's a Republican movement there. So it's I think, going to become more active now that the Queen's gone. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think the onus is kind of on the monarchy at this point to prove why they should still have any position in these countries as opposed to why not. And that's certainly a flip. Yeah.
Yep. Totally. Okay, next one. Valerie in New Mexico. It's a question about money. And she writes this. Can we assume that new bills and coins minted in the Commonwealth will now contain the image of King Charles III? How long will it take before the majority of the currency features the image of Charles and not Elizabeth?
Well, you made me smart on this the other day when we were doing half full, half empty. And yes, the currency will be updated with King Charles the Third visage, but it won't happen immediately. Currency that's currently in circulation, say that three times fast, won't be removed. But the currency with the Queen will still be legal tender. You can still use it even in the Commonwealth nations and realms and everything. But they are going to start circulating in currency with King Charles III on it. So right now, there are 4.7 billion UK banknotes worth 82 billion pounds. That's the equivalent of $95 billion in circulation and about 29 billion coins. And that's all money that right now has the Queen's image on it. And I mean, they're not going to just toss it. It's probably going to be in circulation for years. Once the switch does happen, Charles's image is going to be facing to the left because Elizabeth's image faced to the right, and it's tradition that it be reversed, which is, you know, a little detail for your trivia night. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what that image is going to look like yet. We'll probably get some sort of details on that after the 10-day mourning period is over. And so, yeah, and then the other countries in the Commonwealth will probably update their currency whenever they feel like it. Because if they even want to put Charles again on the currency, that might be one of the ways that people start kind of stepping back. Like maybe they don't want to replace their currency with an image of King Charles. They would rather do it with somebody local to their own countries. I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the sort of newer changes.
I think for sure. Also because Charles, you know, Charles is a much less loved figure than his mother, right? We know more about his background. It's more problematical, and you know, people might not be in the mood for it. So, you know,
I really thought you were going to say something about the way he looks, and I was so ready to be like, Kai, don't do that.
No, I would absolutely not. Come on. No, not at all. Not at all. All right, we're done. We're done. Thanks for listening. Back tomorrow with the news, some smiles as well.
Yeah, and in the meantime, please keep sending us your questions. Our email is makemesmart@marketplace.org. Again, you can leave us a voicemail at 508-UB-SMART. Shirt that makes a lot of noise.
That's all good. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Olivia Zhao is our intern. Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter.
Today's show was engineered by Drew Jostad and Ben Tolliday, and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Our senior producer is Bridget Bodner. I'm off to the spelling bee now.
Nice. Good luck.
It's the Politicians versus Journalists spelling bee at the Press Club, and I will not be participating.
Y'all need to get out more, man. I'm down with the softball game. I don't know about a spelling bee.
This is us getting out.
Oh, Jesus.